If you're looking for a ball game, Twins A's rained out today. It's been moved to Sunday, and it'll be a Father's Day split double header. Here's the lay of the land here on CCO. The Huddle, Pete Najeri and Dave Schwartz between 10 and noon, as per usual. And then at noon, Inside Twins, Chris Atterbury, Derek Falvey. At 12:30, the lineup card, first pitch, 1:10 on Father's Day. Then, following that game, a break, and we'll have another game Sunday night. Lineup card at 6, first pitch at 6:40. Once again, Twins and A is rained out, and the heavier rain moving into the Twin Cities on this Saturday afternoon. As a result, State Lacrosse, they had to do some juggling. The girls' state championship game will be played at Chaska at 2:30 today as scheduled, and that is Prior Lake against Lakeville South. Boys' state championship lacrosse game has been moved to Chaska, and that'll be a 2:30 start as well, and that has been Old St. Margaret's playing Lakeville North. That originally was scheduled to be played at 6 over at Eden Prairie, but they've moved that game. And tickets for both venues, good at both venues, Chaska High School and Eden Prairie High School. State Baseball Championship game scheduled for Target Field. All four games starting at 10 a.m. on Monday. And the weather, a bit of a mixed bag. And we'll continue to keep an eye on the weather through the day. The one thing we do note, and we want to bring this up, real quickly, and that is that excessive heat watch for the Twin Cities metro area tomorrow. And that's Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington counties. Sunday afternoon through Sunday evening, highs in the 90s, high humidities, heat indices in the low triple digits. And that is, once again, an excessive heat watch in effect for the metro area tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow evening here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul. It is 2:09. Once again, no Twins ball game today, but Andrew Halverson of the Treasure Island Baseball Network has said, hey, I've got this great interview Dan Gladden did with one of the all-time great Twins. Of course, Dan Gladden, a Twins Hall of Fame member, Joe Nathan, sat down and visited. And by the way, you'll hear a part of this interview on the pregame show on Father's Day. Here's Dan Gladden. Here's Jonah Athan on the home of the Twins. News Talk, 830-WCCO.
It's Behind the Batting Cage segment, and Joe Nathan, Twins Hall of Famer, joins us. And let the Twins fans out there in Twins territory know what Joe is doing in town now.
I actually brought my son out here to get some knowledge from the best. You know, I got the M&M boys working with Cole and just kind of soaking it in. You know, I loved the fact yesterday we were out there hitting, and, you know, it wasn't the amount of swings that he took. It was really quality over quantity yesterday, but the ball talk was outstanding, and just him soaking in, you know, just the knowledge from Maurer and Moore.
Is that something that Joe Nathan flies in, brings his son in here to get some knowledge here to talk to these guys? Do you end up paying these guys? Are they charging Joe Nathan and his family for some private hitting lessons?
No. Fortunately, they were kind enough to do some pro bono work.
So. You know what? You talk about also the sit down part of it, the mental part of the game, and it sounds like, you know, a little bit of tweak with the mechanics part of it, but just to be able to listen to their approach. And really kind of two different types of approach between Maurer and Morneau?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's two different styles and mechanics and all that, but it's always getting to the same thing, and that's making your best contact and getting to a place where you can make your best contact. And
do you have a tough time maybe overcoaching your son? Because a lot of times the parents kind of can get in the way. At some point you might need to let him go.
Yep.
He's in college, a freshman right now.
Yeah, he's in college now, and you're right. I mean, I coached him travel ball and all that stuff up until he was about 14, and then I kind of felt that I felt like I needed to take a step back and let somebody else kind of scream at them on the field. You know, I do that enough at the house. So, yeah, let somebody else take the reins and let them go. You know, he comes and asks questions when he needs to, but I do try to stay back. It's hard, but I do try to stay away as much as I can.
You know, a lot of times that you asked, is the desire there? Yeah. Is the commitment there? Mm-hmm. And do you find that to be able to evaluate your own son fairly?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you know, I ask him all the time. You know, I say, listen, if you want to do this, it's a huge sacrifice. Like, he's going to miss his summer with his buddies back home. He's going up to play summer ball. So I was like, this is going to be your decision, and you got to figure out if this sacrifice is what you want. You know, you don't know where the end of the road is. It may be after college and you're done, and you figure out what you want to do. It may be next year. Could be this week. Who knows? Whatever you like. You know, this is your decision. Now it's your life. I'm here to guide you and give you advice. But I want you to start making the big, tough decisions.
It's always important. I can tell when I'm getting old, when maybe teammates or guys that I played against, all of a sudden their sons show up and start playing professional baseball. Was he able to kind of watch you and your career when you were playing?
Yeah, he pretty much lived in the clubhouse. You know, he soaked it in. He enjoyed it. He had a blast with other kids when they were around. But, you know, also got to watch a ton of baseball. And, you know, he's still kind of is a student of the game in that sense. Is he watches the game. I think now it's even different with him watching it, sitting there going, I could kind of sense that he's like, can I play at this type of level and get to this.
Talk a little bit about, we've got, I think, one of the best in Duran's intro into the bullpen. You also had a cool one.
Yeah.
Did you come up with yours like Durant, or did you have help with somebody that – and who inspired you to come up with yours? Was it somebody that else around the league that had one that you thought was cool?
You know, I just sat there and said, what do I think would sound kind of cool coming in? And, you know, it happened to be that movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg, Jennifer Aniston, and – I thought that might be a cool little sound to come into, and maybe the crowd will get into it. And that's what it's all about, creating an atmosphere that kind of gets your heart pumping and gets everybody into the mode. So, you know, Duran's is second to none. I mean, it's outstanding watching him come in. I think it's kind of cool now. They got the light feature and all that, too. So it adds to it all.
It does. It really it kicks in the atmosphere. And, you know, I remember, I think it was Trevor Hoffman that held bells that, you know.
First. That was the first one where I got goosebumps.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, I think that's the evolution of this game here that, you know, guys, of course, have walk-up songs and stuff like that. But to be able to kind of orchestrate something to an entrance like that, it bodes well. But then again, I think you have to be that player to be able to come in and perform.
Yeah, you got to, I mean, obviously enjoy that moment, but then it's time to take a deep breath and go out there and do what's more important and get three outs.
Talk a little bit about you're in the Twins Hall of Fame, Terry Ryan, and, of course, our good buddy Rick Stelmazik going in this year. Your thoughts on both those guys?
Man, just outstanding individuals, outstanding people. I just feel blessed to had a chance to talk to both of them. Stelly down in the pen, obviously, a ton, and we had a blast with him down there. He kept us loose and kept us rolling. I think that was the main reason we were so good is, you know, we were just down there cracking up until that phone rang, and then it's, you know, all right, let's go get three outs and pass the baton on and keep rolling.
Wasn't it Terry Ryan that traded for you from the Giants?
Yeah.
Was it A.J. Pierzynski?
Yeah, A.J. It was me, Liriano, and Boof.
You know, our paths crossed, boy, when I was a minor league Rover, I think, in 1999.
Yeah.
And you were a player, I'm not sure if you were in Bakersfield or San Jose.
I was in San Jose,
San Jose, and the Giants had two teams, Bakersfield and San Jose.
Correct.
And I remember that, you know, taking the hitters out after a ball game, you preferred to hang out with the hitters.
Yeah.
And you explained to me, you go, Danny, I can learn more listening to a hitter.
1,000%.
Than I can the pitching coach.
Yeah. I think, you know, sometimes we tend to give too much credit, you know, and it's nice to hang out with the hitters and just listen to them and kind of see how difficult it is to hit a baseball. So, you know, a lot of times we can go out there and just, you know, kind of trick ourselves into trying to be too fine and too perfect and, you know, just throw the ball over the plate, and you got the advantage from the start.
I go back to the I'm not sure what year spring training it was. You were pitching against Boston, and you got the elbow injury.
Yep.
And personally, I go back to the year before in New York.
Yeah.
When you pitched that playoff game, and it was kind of poor weather.
Yep.
But you pitched like 54 pitches.
Yeah.
And you were a foul ball away from getting out of there with maybe 35, but it is extended. Do you look back at that and say that maybe that had kind of an effect as to what happened the following year?
For sure. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. But when you're in that mode, you're competing and you're in playoffs in Yankee Stadium, and that's the last thing on your mind. You're not thinking pitch count. You're just thinking, how can I get out of this thing?
What do you think that is the cause of these uptick in Tommy John surgeries now? People have said stronger, harder, they throw harder. You got an idea as to why it's an uptick?
I think it's just that. I think everyone's going velo mode right now, and you know, whether it's right or wrong, I mean, it's happening. And unfortunately, the ligament's still the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you may throw harder. That doesn't mean this thing's stronger. You can't build your tendons and ligament up. You can build your muscles up, but, you know, I think that's, you know, it's just a bad formula right now. You know, you got more guys throwing over 100, but you're going to have more TJs.
Do you still get up in the morning and follow a team?
These guys. You know, I follow the Twins. My son and I both. He'll say he's a Braves and Twins guy. So at least he's got one from each league. But, yeah, I follow these guys mainly, just kind of keep my eyes.
Does your son have a favorite player on the Twins?
On the Twins? Probably Buxton.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, I know he, you know, he's an infielder at heart. But, you know, I think he likes his style. And as long as we keep him out there, he's a pretty good one to have.
Any interest in you in getting back out on the field as a coach or something?
Yeah, I mean, we're almost empty in the house. My daughter's about to be a senior, so it's scary on that front.
But, being an empty nester, huh?
Being an empty nester, I may have some time on my hands.
I did that, and it's like, okay, you're looking at your wife going, what are we going to do here? okay, yeah, I got to go do something.
That's right. I can only play so much golf.
You know, and I found that out, too. When I got done playing, all my friends worked.
Yeah.
So I had no friends Monday through Friday. And it's like, okay, I got to find something to do.
Where's everybody at?
Yeah. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure talking baseball with you.
Absolute pleasure.
All right, there he is, Dan Gladden with Joe Nathan. What a great chat. And you'll hear part of that on the pregame show tomorrow, but thanks to Andrew Halverson and the Treasure Island Baseball Network for making that available. Very good Father's Day chat, no doubt. And it'll be a busy Father's Day at Target Field tomorrow. Twins are going to play two. Once again, rained out today. The regular Father's Day tilt. Our coverage begins at noon, if you're just joining us. It'll be Inside Twins, Derek Falvey, Chris Atterbury. Lineup card at 12:30, first pitch at 1:10. Then following that game, a break. We'll have Rob Dreisland in the Outdoor News between 5 and 6. And then starting at 6, the lineup card, first pitch 6:40 of today's game. They're going to make up today's game tomorrow night at Target Field. Twins and A's have Monday off, so Oakland can leave town a little bit later than normal on Sunday. So they'll play two split doubleheader at Target Field on Father's Day. And the rain continues to move into the cities. Once again, we expect rain this afternoon and tonight. Rain will end overnight. We'll have more on the weather coming up. Caitlin Clark not on the Olympic team. The controversy continues. Caitlin Clark, of course, set all those records as a collegiate player at Iowa. Has now moved to the Indiana Fever of the WNBA. Now, there seems to be a fair amount of resentment, but we'll get into the decision of her not being on the team, coached by Lynx head coach Cheryl Reeve, in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Thank you.
Twins and A's postponed today. They'll play two tomorrow. Coverage begins at noon and then again at 6. We'll have the huddle, Pete Najarian and Dave Schwartz, as always, between 10 and noon. Rain's moved into the cities, and that rain's going to continue through tonight. It looks like it'll taper off midnight, 1 a.m. or so. And then Father's Day should be pretty good. And then overnight into Monday, another chance of showers and thunderstorms as this unsettled weather pattern continues. They're getting set to start those state lacrosse championship games. The girls are in Eden Prairie. The boys are out of Chaska. And they'll be able to play in the rain as long as we don't have any lightning. They'll be able to get those state lacrosse championship games in. And then state baseball championship games Monday at Target Field. And the weather looks a bit unsettled for that, unfortunately. Something that has been settled, Caitlin Clark will not be part of Team USA women's basketball this year. Cheryl Reeve of the Lynx, of course, one of the all-time great coaches, four titles at the helm of the Lynx, is coaching USA basketball for this Olympics. Caitlin Clark not on the team. I'm not at all surprised. This is a league filled with superstars, filled with the best of the best. And Caitlin Clark, even though she set all those records, and television, NBC, the network carrying the Olympics, probably would have loved to have had Caitlin Clark there for the ratings, the eyeballs. I'm not sure she's earned a spot on the team, considering all the other talent out there. Josh, I don't know what you think about it. Record-setting collegiate career, getting her feet wet in the WNBA. There's been some controversy there. But I just think there are probably 12 more players who are Americans that probably deserve this Olympic shot more than she does at this moment in time.
Yeah, I just think I think the streams have been crossed at the wrong time here, unfortunately. It's been, we're still riding the wave of Caitlin Clark and breaking Pistol Pete, as far as the NCAA scoring record and all that stuff. And we're just still kind of riding that high, and this just happened to drop at the wrong time. Because let's be honest, we haven't seen anything like this in women's basketball in quite some time, if not ever, where people are really talking about women's athletics for the first time in a long time. And unfortunately, it stinks that she's not on the team, but also my first initial quick trigger reaction to it was, man, how do you leave the biggest name in women's basketball off the team? And then, of course, the more I kind of sat on it and just looking at the roster, it's like, well, this person's kind of earned their keep. This person's earned their keep. This person's earned their keep. It's all about kind of building your resume and being able to build that experience before jumping into the fire. And I think Team USA, first of all, that's a huge spot for someone like Caitlin Clark to jump into initially anyways. I feel like you need to get some more seasoning on the professional level before you jump straight into Team USA. There's only one person that's really kind of jumped in early, and that's Michael Jordan, and I think he did pretty okay for himself in his career after that. So I have no issue with Caitlin Clark being left off the team.
Well, once upon a time, it was the kids. It was the college players who represented the United States at the Olympic Games when it was all out, This is all about amateur athletes. And then eventually they said, well, it's silly because, in some of these sports, particularly in the Eastern Bloc, are they really amateurs or are they professionals? So the lines became so blurred that it became the dream team. So now you have the best of the best. Once upon a time in the Winter Olympics, you'd have the NHL stars. And I think they're going back to that, where if memory serves, next Winter Olympic Games, I believe the NHL stars from wherever they're from, Europe, Canada, the United States, will be able to participate. So now that it is, is Caitlin Clark one of the 12 best players from the United States playing in the WNBA or professionally? And I think any reasonable person would say no. So in that respect, her time will come. And don't get me wrong, I am a big fan. I'm a big fan of what she did in the college game, and I'm a big fan of her getting her opportunity at the next level. And then as far as the rough fouls and so on and so forth, rookies go through that in every sport.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be easy in the NFL for J.J. McCarthy? Do you think veterans on the other side of the ball for opposing teams are going to cut J.J. McCarthy any slack? No, if they get a chance to hit him, they're going to hit him hard. they're going to hit them as hard as they can. So I think in some ways it's much ado about nothing. This is part of the process, and she'll have an opportunity to not only prove, and I think she has to this point, prove that she belongs in the WNBA, and will she emerge on her own right as a superstar in the WNBA? Time will tell.
Yeah, I think I think people just need to take a step back, breathe deeply, and realize this woman, if all goes well and all goes right for her career going forward as it has through college, she will be on Team USA at some point. She has a lot of opportunities to do that.
Agreed.
This isn't a make or break year for her or anything. It's like if she doesn't win the WNBA championship in her first season, she's on one of the worst teams that you could be on in the WNBA. So I'm sure a lot of people are going to still be like, man, is she a bust? Is Caitlin Clark not what we thought she was? No, that has nothing to do with it. There will be so many opportunities for this woman to make her legacy known to the world. And this is just, it's the hype train getting caught at the wrong time, unfortunately.
Yeah, and once again, I go back to people who watch women's basketball in the Olympics. The casual fan probably would have wanted to see her there. But I think people who follow hoops say it's part of the process. It's not her time right now. It is 2:32, 28 minutes in front of 3. We'll have another update on that weather. Twins postponed today. They'll play a split doubleheader. Our coverage begins at noon and again at 6. Twins and A's will play 2 on Sunday here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Leaders are on the course at the U.S. Open. And right at the top of the board, Ludvig Åberg from Sweden at 5 under par. Matthew Pavon, the Frenchman, moved into that group at 4 under par, along with Bryson DeChambeau, Thomas Dettry, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, Rory McIlroy at 3 under par. Should be a great weekend at the U.S. Open. Pleased to be joined right now by Kevin Lynch, Timberwolves analyst for Bally Sports North. Kev, good to visit with you. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. What are you doing on this rainy day?
I was out in Rosemont at this function, this basketball function, and I'm driving home. It's raining, and I'll be home in like 30 seconds to park and have a nice chat with you.
Do you need a break? I can always always do the weather again if you need to get in the house.
It's been a wet spring, hasn't it been?
I mean,
doubt. We've gotten a lot of rain, and it seems like we've been kind of in a drought for a few years here. So it's then this past winter, we really didn't have a winter and very little snow. So to get some rain and some precip is a good thing for the farmers out there.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Fill up the lakes or the rivers,
yeah,
etc. It was weird because a year ago, it was so dry. It was kind of like, this is a reminder on how June is. And I remember, all the grad parties when my daughters were coming up, we were always worried about showers and thunderstorms planning grad parties. That really wasn't a factor at all last year. And then my first cousin, his youngest daughter graduated from Moundsview. And I stopped. It was a morning grad party. They had bagels and stuff, and I loaded up. I didn't get cheated at the bagel bar this morning. There's always, and I don't know if you remember, your grad party when you graduated from high school, but there was always that worry about showers and thunderstorms. I remember my grad party 100 years ago that it was on a Sunday because it was the final round of the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, half the people at the party were in the house watching the golf. Yeah, and it wrecked my day when Tom Watson chipped in on, because I was a huge Jack Nicklaus fan. It ruined my day when Watson chipped in on 17 and went on to win the U.S. Open. I'm like, oh, that's great. Yeah, thanks for the money. Jack got beat. It was.
My high school graduation party. So where we grew up in Bloomington, our house, get this, for all those years, we never had air conditioning. And so it was, I mean, some of those hot summers in the 1970s or whatever, it was like you're sleeping in a kiln or something. It's that in the summertime.
Oh.
So the day before my high school graduation party, so I'm 18 years old, my dad, so all the kids are out of the house. My sister and I are graduating from high school. We're on to college. My older brothers are all already out of the house. My dad finally gets, the day before this graduation party, gets air conditioning.
So central air at the Lynch house?
Yeah. Finally had air conditioning and we all leave.
Oh, well, he knew how to time it. And here's the thing, though, Kev. It made you tough, didn't it?
In some ways. I mean, we would, on the really hot summer July nights, and we're like, everybody would head down to the basement because it was cooler down there, and we're all sleeping on the floor or on the height of bed or, you know, height of couch or whatever, and just trying to get some Z's when it's, you know, 95 degrees at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. It's funny you bring up air conditioning because my dad grew up without air conditioning on the east side of St. Paul, and it wasn't very common when he grew up. And he graduated from Johnson in 61, and his mom and dad didn't have air. But by the time I came along and we moved out to Champlin, my mom and dad bought a house when we moved from St. Paul out to Champlin, bought a house with central air. And he loved that because it was kind of like, I'm never again going to go through that. I'm going to have air conditioning, period. So I was a child of air conditioning. We always had air. But when I got out of school, my first radio job was out in Montevideo. And I could barely afford to eat in my first radio job and put gas in my car. So there's no way I could afford air. And that first summer without air out in Montevideo, I suffered. I was like, I got through it. But on the really hot, humid nights, I would go sleep at the radio station and just sleep on the couch in the lobby because I just couldn't deal with it. Because I grew up with air. So
I can top that story, Steve. So in 1977, my family, so my three older brothers, my twin sister and I, and my mom and dad, we pile into the station wagon. We're pulling a pop-up camper. My dad was a high school teacher, right? So
sure.
He was coaching too. So he had a small window in August to take a camping trip. So that summer of 1977, we pulled a camper out to California. We're driving through Nevada in August, and my dad refused to put on the air conditioning in the station wagon.
Wow.
We were camping in Las Vegas. In a parking lot. That's where we put the camper up.
Oh, wow. He was trying to toughen you up, Kev.
It worked. That's all I know. we got very little sleep when it came to July and August in the Lynch household.
Yeah, that is amazing. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk NBA Finals. Kevin Lynch joining us, Timberwolves analyst, Bally Sports North, here on a Saturday. Twins rained out. They'll play two with the A's. Our coverage begins at noon on Father's Day here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Kevin Lynch joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Little NBA Finals talk. There will be a Game 5 in Boston on Monday night. And Kev, I really didn't see this coming considering how good Boston was. Game 1, Game 2 at home, really dominated. Going to Game 3, the Mavericks made a little run, and then Boston ultimately pulled away. And the Mavericks just came out and dominated in Game 4. Do you buy into this theory where it's like, the Celtics, we're up 3-0. If we win tonight, we can always go home and close them out?
That's a good question. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of times there's a tendency for teams to, when they're up 3-0, even though your game four is on the road,
it seems like the tendency a lot of times is to pull back a little bit. Now, you can sit here and debate about why that is and why the team that's down 0-3 can come back and win that game four. But, I think at the end of the day, Boston's just better. Dallas is just a weird team to me, and the Wolves just – so they can – if you don't know how to approach them, they can kind of dominate you with Doncic and Irving like they did against the Wolves. But, Boston is just a better team than Dallas. I think they've done a good job of taking some things away that really bothered the Wolves. And this is what you get. You know, you're up 3-0, and I think sometimes there is that tendency, to answer your question, Steve, to kind of pull back, and you feel like, well, we're in kind of control here, and that's maybe human nature to a degree, to kind of take your foot off the pedal a little bit, and then Dallas jumps on you, and then they win going away. So why that is, I don't know, but here we go, game five, and I think Boston's gonna end it right here.
Yeah, and you brought up something that's also been a theme in this finals, because Boston, has looked great, and they were the favorite in the Eastern Conference, and I think a lot of people had them as the favorite to win the NBA Finals as we got into the playoffs, and you got a feel for, the teams that the Celtics are the odds-on favorite, and they're still certainly the odds-on favorite, up 3-1. But it takes you back to that Timberwolves series and say, were there things the Timberwolves could have adjusted to, yeah, or done differently to handle Doncic and take advantage of the fact that, defensively, he leaves a lot to be desired, and maybe the Timberwolves left some things on the table in that series.
Oh, man. There's so much to say to that question, Steve, and that comment. I mean, it's like the Wolves' one chance to win the series against Dallas and get to the finals was win game one. They were up they were leading in game one against Dallas, probably 90% of that game, maybe even more. Yeah. And then they just collapse at the very end. And then, what that did is Dallas thinks these guys aren't ready, which apparently the Wolves weren't, with how the series went against Dallas. So that gave the Mavericks confidence, and then they win game two at Target Center, and then it's basically over after that. And then in game five, a chance for the Wolves to get back into the series or get into the series, and then they're down, 35 at home.
Oh.
It just was a debacle. The Wolves, at the end of the day, Steve, got dominated in every single way possible in that series. And had the Wolves won game one, gives them a little confidence. Then you kind of move past what happened in the Denver series and all the hangover effect, from that series and the high that everybody was on. But it was just like, what a weird series, playoff run for the Wolves. You go into the Phoenix series thinking Wolves are going to be done in four or five. Well, the Wolves dominate the Suns and win. Then you go into against the defending champs, Denver. You think, okay, the Wolves played well against Phoenix, but this is a different animal. Probably going to lose. The Wolves win in seven. And then everybody's feeling great. Then you get to Dallas and you think, oh, the Wolves are going to take this in five or six games. And they get just worked over and done in five. Nobody could predict how these NBA series go, and it was just an up and down thing for the Wolves. But their one chance to beat Dallas and get to the finals against Boston, Steve, but they had to win game one to calm down a little bit, and they were rattled that entire Dallas series.
And back to Doncic, and he's had a lot of critics in this series because, he does whine and complain on and so forth, and we don't need to go down that rabbit hole in particular, but the fact that he is a very skilled offensive player, he is a tremendous talent, a strong 6'7" guy, but defensively he's certainly been exposed. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
He actually did some good things defensively. The first three games they worked him over.
Yep.
And he's got, he's a liability defensively in some ways, especially just playing one-on-one. So, and then he played better defensively last night. And, the funny thing about him is he's 6'7", and his size makes it so hard for people to guard him, and they list him, this is a funny thing, he's listed at 6'7", which I think is pretty legitimate height, because a lot of NBA heights are inflated. The guys aren't as tall as they're listed. But they list him at 230 pounds. There's no way. He's got to be 260, 270 for 6'7". And believe me, with the way he plays, he uses that extra weight on him to keep people away from him. So, he's a handful, and you're right, the whining, he's a really good offensive player, but the whining and the crying and the constant barking at the refs, it gets old, man. I'm tired of watching it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's been a knock on Cat for sure. So we'll get another game at least on Monday night, but I totally agree. I think the Celtics are superior and will likely close it out on Monday night. But Kev, always good to visit with you. Thanks so much for the time today, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Sounds good, Steve. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
All right, there he is, Kevin Lynch, Valley Sports North Timberwolves analyst, and of course had that great high school career at Bloomington Jefferson, played at the U, went on to the NBA, played in Europe for a long time. Known Kevin a long time. Good guy. We have all the news and weather coming up at 3 o'clock, and it's turned into a weather day here. Twins were rained out against Oakland. They'll play two tomorrow. And if you're just joining us or haven't heard by now, Twins will play two tomorrow, a split doubleheader. Our coverage begins at noon with Inside Twins, Derek Falvey, and once again, Chris Atterbury. First pitch of game one, 1:10. The other game, coverage starts at 6. First pitch, 6:40. Here on CCO. If you're looking for a ball game, Twins A's rained out today. It's been moved to Sunday, and it'll be a Father's Day split doubleheader. Here's the lay of the land here on CCO. The Huddle, Pete Najeri and Dave Schwartz between 10 and noon, as per usual. And then at noon, Inside Twins, Chris Atterbury, Derek Falvey. At 12:30, the lineup card, first pitch, 1:10 on Father's Day. Then, following that game, a break, and we'll have another game Sunday night. Lineup card at 6, first pitch at 6:40. Once again, Twins and A is rained out, and the heavier rain moving into the Twin Cities on this Saturday afternoon. As a result, State Lacrosse, they had to do some juggling. The girls' state championship game will be played at Chaska at 2:30 today as scheduled, and that is Prior Lake against Lakeville South. Boys' state championship lacrosse game has been moved to Chaska, and that'll be a 2:30 start as well, and that is Benilde St. Margaret's playing Lakeville North. That originally was scheduled to be played at 6 over at Eden Prairie, but they've moved that game. And tickets for both venues, good at both venues, Chaska High School and Eden Prairie High School. State Baseball Championship game scheduled for Target Field. All four games starting at 10 a.m. on Monday. And the weather, a bit of a mixed bag. And we'll continue to keep an eye on the weather through the day. The one thing we do note, and we want to bring this up real quickly, and that is that excessive heat watch for the Twin Cities metro area tomorrow. And that's Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington counties. Sunday afternoon through Sunday evening, highs in the 90s, high humidities, heat indices in the low triple digits. And that is, once again, an excessive heat watch in effect for the metro area tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow evening here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul. It is 2:09. Once again, no Twins ball game today, but Andrew Halverson of the Treasure Island Baseball Network has said, hey, I've got this great interview Dan Gladden did with one of the all-time great Twins, of course, Dan Gladden, a Twins Hall of Fame member, Joe Nathan, sat down and visited. And by the way, you'll hear a part of this interview on the pregame show on Father's Day. Here's Dan Gladden. Here's Jonah Athan on the home of the Twins, News Talk 830-WCCO.
It's Behind the Batting Cage segment, and Joe Nathan, Twins Hall of Famer, joins us. And let the Twins fans out there in Twins territory know what Joe is doing in town now.
I actually brought my son out here to get some knowledge from the best. You know, I got the M&M boys working with Cole and just kind of soaking it in. You know, I loved the fact yesterday we were out there hitting, and you know, it wasn't the amount of swings that he took. It was really quality over quantity yesterday, but the ball talk was outstanding, and just him soaking in, you know, just the knowledge from Mauer and Morneau.
Is that something that Joe Nathan flies in, brings his son in here to get some knowledge here, to talk to these guys? Do you end up paying these guys? Are they charging Joe Nathan and his family for some private hitting lessons?
No. Fortunately, they were kind enough to do some pro bono work.
So. You know what? You talk about also the sit-down part of it, the mental part of the game, and it sounds like, you know, a little bit of tweak with the mechanics part of it, but just to be able to listen to their approach, and really kind of two different types of approach between Mauer and Morneau?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's two different styles and mechanics and all that, but it's always getting to the same thing, and that's making your best contact and getting to a place where you can make your best contact. And
do you have a tough time maybe over coaching your son, because a lot of times the parents kind of can get in the way? At some point you might need to let him go.
Yep.
He's in college, a freshman right now.
Yeah he's in college now, and you're right. I mean, I coached him travel ball and all that stuff up until he was about 14. And then I kind of felt that. I felt like I needed to take a step back and let somebody else kind of scream at him on the field. You know, I do that enough at the house. So, let somebody else take the reins and let him go. You know, he comes and asks questions when he needs to, but I do try to stay back. It's hard, but I do try to stay away as much as I can.
You know, a lot of times that you asked, is the desire there? Yeah. Is the commitment there?
Mm-hmm.
And do you find that to be able to evaluate your own son fairly?
Yeah, I think you know, I ask them all the time. You know, I say, listen, if you want to do this, it's a huge sacrifice. Like, he's going to miss his summer with his buddies back home. He's going up to play summer ball. So I was like, this is going to be your decision, and you got to figure out if this sacrifice is what you want. You know, you don't know where the end of the road is. It may be after college and you're done, and you figure out what you want to do. It may be next year. Could be this week. Who knows? Whatever you like. You know, this is your decision. Now it's your life. I'm here to guide you and give you advice, but I want you to start making the big, tough decisions.
It's always important. I can tell when I'm getting old, when maybe teammates or guys that I played against, all of a sudden their sons show up and start playing professional baseball. Was he able to kind of watch you and your career when you were playing?
Yeah, he pretty much lived in the clubhouse. You know, he soaked it in. He enjoyed it. He had a blast with other kids when they were around. But you know, also got to watch a ton of baseball. And you know, he still kind of is a student of the game in that sense. Is he watches the game. I think now it's even different with him watching it, sitting there going, I could kind of sense it. He's like, can I play at this type of level and get to this.
Talk a little bit about it. We've got, I think, one of the best in Duran's intro into the bullpen. You also had a cool one.
Yeah.
Did you come up with yours like Duran, or did you have help with somebody that – and who inspired you to come up with yours? Was it somebody else around the league that had one that you thought was cool?
You know, I just sat there and said, what do I think would sound kind of cool coming in? And, you know, it happened to be that movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg, Jennifer Aniston, and – I thought that might be a cool little sound to come into, and maybe the crowd will get into it. And that's what it's all about, creating an atmosphere that kind of gets your heart pumping and gets everybody into the mode. So, you know, Duran's is second to none. I mean, it's outstanding watching him come in. I think it's kind of cool now. They got the light feature and all that, too. So it adds to it all.
It does. It really it kicks in the atmosphere. And, you know, I remember, I think it was Trevor Hoffman that Hell's Bells that, you know.
That was the first one where I got goosebumps.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's the evolution of this game here, that, you know, guys, of course, have walk-up songs and stuff like that. But to be able to kind of orchestrate something to an entrance like that, it bodes well. But then again, I think you have to be that player to be able to come in and perform.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, obviously enjoy that moment, but then it's time to take a deep breath and go out there and do what's more important and get three outs.
Talk a little bit about you're in the Twins Hall of Fame, Terry Ryan, and, of course, our good buddy Rick Stelmazek going in this year. Your thoughts on both those guys?
Man, just outstanding individuals, outstanding people. I just feel blessed to had a chance to talk to both of them. Stelly down in the pen, obviously, a ton, and we had a blast with him down there. He kept us loose and kept us rolling. I think that was the main reason we were so good is, you know, we were just down there cracking up until that phone rang, and then it's, you know, all right, let's go get three outs and pass the baton on and keep rolling.
Wasn't it Terry Ryan that traded for you from the Giants?
Yeah.
Was it A.J. Pierzynski?
Yeah, A.J. It was me, Liriano, and Boof.
You know, our paths crossed, boy, when I was I was a minor league Rover, I think, in 1999.
Yeah.
And you were a player, I'm not sure if you were in Bakersfield or San Jose.
I was in San Jose,
San Jose, and the Giants had two teams, Bakersfield and San Jose.
Correct.
And I remember that, you know, taking the hitters out after a ball game, you preferred to hang out with the hitters.
Yeah.
And you explained to me, you go, Danny, I can learn more listening to a hitter.
1,000%.
Than I can the pitching coach.
Yeah. I think, you know, sometimes we tend to give too much credit, you know, and it's nice to hang out with the hitters and just listen to them and kind of see how difficult it is to hit a baseball. So, you know, a lot of times we can go out there and just, you know, kind of trick ourselves into trying to be too fine and too perfect and, you know, just throw the ball over the plate and you got the advantage from the start.
I go back to the I'm not sure what year spring training it was. You were pitching against Boston and you got the elbow injury.
Yep.
And personally, I go back to the year before in New York.
Yeah.
When you pitched that playoff game, and it was kind of poor weather.
Yep.
But you pitched like 54 pitches.
Yeah.
And you were a foul ball away from getting out of there with maybe 35, but it is extended. Do you look back at that and say that maybe that had kind of an effect as to what happened the following year?
For sure. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. But when you're in that mode, you're competing and you're in playoffs in Yankee Stadium and that's the last thing on your mind. You're not thinking pitch count. You're just thinking, how can I get out of this thing?
What do you think that is the cause of these uptick in Tommy John surgeries now? People have said stronger, harder, they throw harder. You got an idea as to why it's an uptick?
I think it's just that. I think everyone's going velo mode right now, and you know, whether it's right or wrong, I mean, it's happening. And unfortunately, the ligament's still the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you may throw harder. That doesn't mean this thing's stronger. You can't build your tendons and ligament up. You can build your muscles up. But, you know, I think that's, you know, it's just a bad formula right now. You know, you got more guys throwing over 100, but you're going to have more TJs.
Do you still get up in the morning and follow a team?
These guys. You know, I follow the Twins. My son and I both. He'll say he's a Braves and Twins guy. So at least he's got one from each league. But, yeah, I follow these guys mainly, just kind of keep my eyes.
Does your son have a favorite player on the Twins?
On the Twins? Probably Buxton,
yeah.
I would say. You know, I know he's an infielder at heart, but, you know, I think he likes his style. And as long as we keep him out there, he's a pretty good one to have.
Any interest in you in getting back out on the field as a coach or something?
Yeah, I mean, we're almost empty in the house. My daughter's about to be a senior, so it's scary on that front.
But, being an empty nester, huh?
Being an empty nester, I may have some time on my hands.
I did that, and it's like, okay, you're looking at your wife going, what are we going to do here? okay, yeah, I got to go do something.
That's right. I can only play so much golf.
You know, and I found that out, too. When I got done playing, all my friends worked.
Yeah.
So I had no friends Monday through Friday. And it's like, okay, I got to find something to do.
Where's everybody at?
Yeah. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure talking baseball with you.
Absolute pleasure.
All right, there he is, Dan Gladden with Joe Nathan. What a great chat. And you'll hear part of that on the pregame show tomorrow, but thanks to Andrew Halverson and the Treasure Island Baseball Network for making that available. Very good Father's Day chat, no doubt. And it'll be a busy Father's Day at Target Field tomorrow. Twins are going to play two. Once again, rained out today. The regular Father's Day tilt. Our coverage begins at noon, if you're just joining us. It'll be Inside Twins, Derek Falvey, Chris Atterbury. Lineup card at 12:30, first pitch at 1:10. Then following that game, a break. We'll have Rob Dreisland in the Outdoor News between 5 and 6. And then starting at 6, the lineup card, first pitch 6:40 of today's game. They're going to make up today's game tomorrow night at Target Field. Twins and A's have Monday off, so Oakland can leave town a little bit later than normal on Sunday. So they'll play two split doubleheader at Target Field on Father's Day. And the rain continues to move into the cities. Once again, we expect rain this afternoon and tonight. Rain will end overnight. We'll have more on the weather coming up. Caitlin Clark not on the Olympic team. The controversy continues. Caitlin Clark, of course, set all those records as a collegiate player at Iowa. Has now moved to the Indiana Fever of the WNBA. Now, there seems to be a fair amount of resentment, but we'll get into the decision of her not being on the team, coached by Lynx head coach Cheryl Reeve, in a moment here on News Talk 830-WCCO.
Thank you.
Twins and A's postponed today. They'll play two tomorrow. Coverage begins at noon and then again at 6. We'll have the huddle, Pete Najeri and Dave Schwartz, as always, between 10 and noon. Rain's moved into the cities, and that rain's going to continue through tonight. It looks like it'll taper off midnight, 1 a.m. or so. And then Father's Day should be pretty good. And then overnight into Monday, another chance of showers and thunderstorms as this unsettled weather pattern continues. They're getting set to start those state lacrosse championship games. The girls are in Eden Prairie. The boys are out of Chaska. And they'll be able to play in the rain as long as we don't have any lightning. They'll be able to get those state lacrosse championship games in. And then state baseball championship games Monday at Target Field. The weather looks a bit unsettled for that, unfortunately. Something that has been settled, Caitlin Clark will not be part of Team USA women's basketball this year. Cheryl Reeve of the Lynx, of course, one of the all-time great coaches, four titles at the helm of the Lynx, is coaching USA basketball for this Olympics. Caitlin Clark not on the team. I'm not at all surprised. This is a league filled with superstars, filled with the best of the best. And Caitlin Clark, even though she set all those records, and television, NBC, the network carrying the Olympics, probably would have loved to have had Caitlin Clark there for the ratings, the eyeballs. I'm not sure she's earned a spot on the team, considering all the other talent out there. Josh, I don't know what you think about it. Record-setting collegiate career, getting her feet wet in the WNBA. There's been some controversy there. But I just think there are probably 12 more players who are Americans that probably deserve this Olympic shot more than she does at this moment in time.
Yeah, I just think the streams have been crossed at the wrong time here, unfortunately. It's been, you were still riding the wave of Caitlin Clark and breaking Pistol Pete, as far as the NCAA scoring record and all that stuff. And we're just still kind of riding that high, and this just happened to drop at the wrong time. Because let's be honest, we haven't seen anything like this in women's basketball in quite some time, if not ever, where people are really talking about women's athletics for the first time in a long time. And unfortunately, it stinks that she's not on the team, but also my first initial, quick trigger reaction to it was, man, how do you leave the biggest name in women's basketball off the team? And then, of course, the more I kind of sat on it and trying to, just looking at the roster, it's like, well, this person's kind of earned their keep. This person's earned their keep. This person's earned their keep. It's all about kind of building your resume and being able to build that experience before jumping into the fire. And I think Team USA, first of all, that's a huge spot for someone like Caitlin Clark to jump into initially anyways. I feel like you need to get some more seasoning on the professional level before you jump straight into Team USA. There's only one person that's really kind of jumped in early, and that's Michael Jordan. And I think he did pretty okay for himself in his career after that. So I have no issue with Caitlin Clark being left off the team.
Well, once upon a time, it was the kids. It was the college players who represented the United States at the Olympic Games when it was all out, you know, this is all about amateur athletes. And then eventually they said, well, you know, it's silly because, you know, in some of these sports, particularly in the Eastern Bloc, are they really amateurs or are they professionals? So the lines became so blurred that it became the dream team. So now you have the best of the best. Once upon a time in the Winter Olympics, you'd have the NHL stars. And I think they're going back to that where if memory serves, next Winter Olympic Games, I believe the NHL stars from wherever they're from, Europe, Canada, the United States, will be able to participate. So now that it is, you know, is Caitlin Clark one of the 12 best players from the United States playing in the WNBA or professionally? And I think any reasonable person would say no. So in that respect, her time will come. And don't get me wrong, I am a big fan. I'm a big fan of what she did in the college game, and I'm a big fan of her getting her opportunity at the next level. And then as far as the rough fouls and so on and so forth, rookies go through that in every sport.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be easy in the NFL for J.J. McCarthy? Do you think veterans on the other side of the ball for opposing teams are going to cut J.J. McCarthy any slack? No, if they get a chance to hit him, they're going to hit him hard. They're going to hit him as hard as they can. I think in some ways it's much ado about nothing. This is part of the process, and she'll have an opportunity to not only prove, and I think she has to this point, proved that she belongs in the WNBA, and will she emerge on her own right as a superstar in the WNBA? Time will tell.
Yeah, I think I think people just need to take a step back, breathe deeply, and realize this woman, if all goes well and all goes right for her career going forward as it has through college, she will be on Team USA at some point. She has a lot of opportunities to do that.
Agreed.
This isn't a make or break year for her or anything. It's like if she doesn't win the WNBA championship in her first season, she's on one of the worst teams that you could be on in the WNBA. So I'm sure a lot of people are going to still be like, man, is she a bust? Is Caitlin Clark not what we thought she was? No, that has nothing to do with it. There will be so many opportunities for this woman to make her legacy known to the world. And this is just, it's the hype train getting caught at the wrong time, unfortunately.
Yeah, and once again, I go back to people who watch women's basketball in the Olympics. The casual fan probably would have wanted to see her there. But I think people who follow hoops say it's part of the process. It's not her time right now. It is 2:32, 28 minutes in front of 3. We'll have another update on that weather. Twins postponed today. They'll play a split doubleheader. Our coverage begins at noon and again at 6. Twins and A's will play 2 on Sunday here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Leaders are on the course at the U.S. Open. And right at the top of the board, Ludvig Åberg from Sweden at 5 under par. Mathieu Pavon, the Frenchman, moved into that group at 4 under par, along with Bryson DeChambeau, Thomas Dettry, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, Rory McIlroy at 3 under par. Should be a great weekend at the U.S. Open. Pleased to be joined right now by Kevin Lynch, Timberwolves analyst for Bally Sports North. Kev, good to visit with you. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. What are you doing on this rainy day?
I was out in Rosemont at this function, this basketball function, and I'm driving home. It's raining, and I'll be home in like 30 seconds to park and have a nice chat with you.
Do you need a break? I can always always do the weather again if you need to get in the house.
It's been a wet spring, hasn't it been?
No doubt.
We've gotten a lot of rain, and it seems like we've been kind of in a drought for a few years here. So it's then this past winter, we really didn't have a winter and very little snow. So to get some rain and some precip is a good thing for the farmers out there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Fill up the lakes or the rivers,
yeah,
et cetera. And it was weird because a year ago, it was so dry, it was kind of like, this is a reminder on how June is. And I remember, you know, all the grad parties when my daughters were coming up, we were always worried about showers and thunderstorms planning grad parties. That really wasn't a factor at all last year. And then my first cousin, his youngest daughter graduated from Moundsview. And I stopped, it was a morning grad party, they had bagels and stuff, and I loaded up. I didn't get cheated. At the bagel bar this morning. There's always, and I don't know if you remember, you know, your grad party when you graduated from high school, but there was always that worry about showers and thunderstorms. I remember my grad party 100 years ago that it was on a Sunday because it was the final round of the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, half the people at the party were in the house watching the golf. Yeah, and it wrecked my day when Tom Watson chipped in on, because I was a huge Jack Nicklaus fan. It ruined my day when Watson chipped in on 17 and went on to win the U.S. Open. I'm like, oh, that's great. Yeah, thanks for the money. Jack got beat. You know. It was.
My high school graduation party. So where we grew up in Bloomington, our house, get this, for all those years, we never had air conditioning. And so it was, I mean, some of those hot summers in the 1970s or whatever, it was like you're sleeping in a kiln or something. It's that in the summertime. Oh. So the day before my high school graduation party, so I'm 18 years old, my dad, so all the kids are out of the house. My sister and I are graduating from high school. We're on to college. My older brothers are all already out of the house. My dad finally gets, the day before this graduation party, gets air conditioning.
So Central air at the Lynch house?
Yeah. Finally had air conditioning and we all leave.
Oh, well, he knew how to time it. And here's the thing, though, Kev. It made you tough, didn't it?
In some ways, we would on the really hot summer July nights, and we're like, everybody would head down to the basement because it was cooler down there, and we're all sleeping on the floor or on the height of bed or, you know, height of couch or whatever, and just trying to get some Z's when it's, you know, 95 degrees at 2 in the morning.
It's funny you bring up air conditioning, because my dad grew up without air conditioning on the east side of St. Paul, and it wasn't very common when he grew up. And he graduated from Johnson in 61, and his mom and dad didn't have air. But by the time I came along and we moved out to Champlin, my mom and dad bought a house when we moved from St. Paul out to Champlin. Bought a house with central air, and he loved that because it was kind of like, I'm never again going to go through that. I'm going to have air conditioning, period. I was a child of air conditioning. We always had air. But when I got out of school, my first radio job was out in Montevideo, and I could barely afford to eat in my first radio job and put gas in my car. So there's no way I could afford air. And that first summer without air out in Montevideo, I suffered. I was like, I got through it. But on the really hot, humid nights, I would go sleep at the radio station and just sleep on the couch in the lobby because I just couldn't deal with it. Because I grew up with air. So
I can top that story, Steve. So in 1977, my family, so my three older brothers, my twin sister and I, and my mom and dad, We pile into the station wagon. We're pulling a pop-up camper. My dad was a high school teacher, right? So
sure.
He was coaching, too. So he had a small window in August to take a camping trip. So that summer of 1977, we pulled a camper out to California. We're driving through Nevada in August, and my dad refused to put on the air conditioning in the station wagon.
Wow.
We were camping in Las Vegas in a parking lot. That's where we put the camper up.
Oh, wow. He was trying to toughen you up, Kev.
It worked. That's all I know. We got very little sleep when it came to July and August in the Lynch household.
Yeah, that is amazing. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk NBA Finals. Kevin Lynch joining us, Timberwolves analyst, Bally Sports North, here on a Saturday. Twins rained out. They'll play two with the A's. Our coverage begins at noon on Father's Day here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Kevin Lynch joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Little NBA Finals talk. There will be a Game 5 in Boston on Monday night. And Kev, I really didn't see this coming, considering how good Boston was. Game 1, Game 2 at home, really dominated. Going to Game 3, the Mavericks made a little run, and then Boston ultimately pulled away. And the Mavericks just came out and dominated in Game 4. Do you buy into this theory where it's like, the Celtics, we're up 3-0. If we win tonight, we can always go home and close them out?
That's a good question. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of times there's a tendency for teams to, when they're up 3-0, even though your game four is on the road, it seems like the tendency a lot of times is to pull back a little bit. Now, you can sit here and debate about why that is and why the team that's down 0-3 can come back and win that game four. But, I think at the end of the day, Boston's just better. Dallas is just a weird team to me, and the Wolves just so they can, if you don't know how to approach them, they can kind of dominate you with Doncic and Irving, like they did against the Wolves. But Boston is just a better team than Dallas. I think they've done a good job of taking some things away that really bothered the Wolves, and this is what you get. You're up 3-0, I think sometimes there is that tendency, to answer your question, Steve, to kind of pull back, and you feel like, well, we're in kind of control here, and that's maybe human nature to a degree, to kind of take your foot off the pedal a little bit, and then Dallas jumps on you, and then they win going away. So why that is, I don't know, but here we go, Game 5, and I think Boston's gonna end it right here.
Yeah, and you brought up something that's also been a theme in this finals, because Boston, has looked great, and they were the favorite in the Eastern Conference, and I think a lot of people had them as the favorite to win the NBA Finals as we got into the playoffs, and you got a feel for, the teams that the Celtics are the odds-on favorite, and they're still certainly the odds-on favorite, up 3-1. But it takes you back to that Timberwolves series and say, were there things the Timberwolves could have adjusted to or done differently to handle Doncic and take advantage of the fact that, defensively, he leaves a lot to be desired, and maybe the Timberwolves left some things on the table in that series?
Oh, man. I mean, there's so much to say to that question, Steve, and that comment. I mean, it's like, the Wolves' one chance to win the series against Dallas and get to the finals was win Game 1. They were up, they were leading in Game 1 against Dallas, probably 90% of that game, maybe even more. Yeah. And then they just collapse at the very end. And then, what that did is Dallas thinks these guys aren't ready, which apparently the Wolves weren't, with how the series went. Against Dallas, so that gave the Mavericks confidence, and then they win Game 2 at Target Center, and then it's basically over after that. And then in Game 5, a chance for the Wolves to get back into the series, And then they're down, what, 35 at home. You know, it just was a debacle. The Wolves, at the end of the day, Steve, got dominated in every single way possible in that series. And had the Wolves won game one, gives them a little confidence. Then you kind of move past what happened in the Denver series and all the hangover effect, you know, from that series and the high that everybody was on. But it was just like, what a weird series, playoff run for the Wolves. You go into the Phoenix series thinking Wolves are going to be done in four or five. Well, the Wolves dominate the Suns and win. Then you go into against the defending champs, Denver. You think, okay, the Wolves played well against Phoenix, but this is a different animal, probably going to lose. The Wolves win in seven. And then everybody's feeling great. Then you get to Dallas, and you think, oh, the Wolves are going to take this in five or six games, and they get just worked over and done in five. It just, I mean, nobody could predict how these NBA series go, and it was just an up-and-down thing for the Wolves. But their one chance to beat Dallas and get to the finals against Boston, Steve, but they had to win game one to calm down a little bit, and they were rattled that entire Dallas series.
And back to Doncic, and he's had a lot of critics in this series because, you know, he does whine and complain, and so forth, you know, and we don't need to go down that rabbit hole in particular, but the fact that he is a very skilled offensive player, he is a tremendous talent, you know, a strong 6'7" guy, but defensively, he's certainly been exposed. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
You know, he actually did some good things defensively. Yeah, you know, the first three games, they worked him over. And he's got, you know, he's a liability defensively in some ways, especially just playing one-on-one. So, and then he played better defensively last night. And, the funny thing about him is you know, he's 6'7", and his size makes it so hard for people to guard him, you know. And they list him, this is a funny thing, he's listed at 6'7", which I think is pretty legitimate height, because a lot of NBA heights are inflated. The guys aren't as tall as they're listed. But they list him at 230 pounds. There's no way. He's got to be 260, 270 for 6'7". And believe me, with the way he plays, he uses that extra weight on him to keep people away from him. So, he's a handful, and you're right, the whining, a really good offensive player, but the whining and the crying and the constant barking at the refs, it gets old, man. I'm tired of watching it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's been a knock on Cat for sure. So we'll get another game at least on Monday night, but I totally agree. I think the Celtics are superior and will likely close it out on Monday night. But Kev, always good to visit with you. Thanks so much for the time today, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Sounds good, Steve. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
All right, there he is, Kevin Lynch, Valley Sports North Timberwolves analyst, and of course had that great high school career at Bloomington Jefferson, played at the U, went on to the NBA, played in Europe for a long time. Known Kevin a long time. Good guy. We have all the news and weather coming up at 3 o'clock, and it's turned into a weather day here. Twins were rained out against Oakland. They'll play two tomorrow. And if you're just joining us or haven't heard by now, Twins will play two tomorrow, a split doubleheader. Our coverage begins at noon with Inside Twins, Derek Falvey, and once again, Chris Atterbury. First pitch of game one, 1:10. The other game, coverage starts at 6. First pitch, 6:40. Here on CCO.